David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, joins us to talk about the latest science news. Hi, David.
Hey, Rob.
So what stories do you have for us today?
Well, Rob, we're going to talk about how you can tell if you're a money maker by looking at your hands, how caffeine might be linked to hallucinations, and finally, how future astronauts may survive by eating silkworms.
Well, I'm looking at my hands. How do I tell if I'm a moneymaker? Let's start with that story.
Well, Rob, look at your ring finger. Now, if it's bigger than your index finger,
it is,
and mine is too, it means that you are exposed to more testosterone in the womb than people who have the opposite finger ratio. And what this does is this extra amount of testosterone sensitizes you as an adult to testosterone. And what that in turn does, studies have shown, is it makes you more willing to take risks, and it tends to give you quicker reactions.
Both important things for financial traders.
Exactly. You can think of a financial trader on the trading floor. And obviously, these people have to be able to make split-second decisions. There's a lot of activity going on the floor. And a lot of their job involves dealing with big risks.
And some research suggests that people who had bigger ring fingers than index fingers made more money than those who didn't.
Exactly. What researchers did in this new study was they actually took handprints of 44 day traders on a fast-paced London trading floor, and they examined their ring finger to index finger ratio. And this was all men. And what they found was that traders that had a longer ring finger than their index finger made a lot more money than traders who had the opposite ratio. In fact, over a 20-month period, the traders with the larger ring fingers made an average of $1.2 million, which was six times more than traders who had larger index fingers than ring fingers.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
Now, you said this didn't apply to women.
Well, they only studied men.
And they only studied men that were in a fast-paced trading environment.
Exactly. And there's a lot of other traders besides just these traders that work on these fast-paced trading floors. In fact, you've got people that tend to do much more long-term investments. And the authors of the study say that it's possible that these people who do longer-term investments may utilize a different skill set.
How is this research being received?
Well, one of the experts that the writer of this article spoke to called the research fascinating, and he says he's really interested in this idea of looking at financial trading not as this sort of idea of what's rational and people making rational decisions, but rather in the sphere of natural selection. What is it about our bodies or our physiology that may make us more prone to making money than other people?
I imagine there'd be a whole host of ethical issues if you pursued that line of thinking too long.
It seems like it certainly could be a problem.
Well, from the physiology of what makes for a good day trader to the physiology behind hallucinations. Caffeine? Really? I'm having some coffee right now.
Well, if you believe this article, if you're drinking a lot of coffee, you may be more prone to hallucinations than the average person.
How so?
Well, the basis of this study is a steroid hormone our body produces known as cortisol. And other studies have shown that when we're stressed out, our body tends to produce a lot of cortisol. And cortisol can cause people to see and hear things that aren't there. Now, the link to caffeine is other studies have shown that caffeine can increase our response to stress and therefore also have an effect on this cortisol pathway.
So researchers were looking for experimental evidence to validate this connection.
Exactly. And what this team did was they created an online survey. And this survey had about 200 questions, and it asked things like, how many cups of coffee do you drink a day, and how strong is the coffee that you drink? But it also asked respondents to rate the trueness of statements like, sometimes I feel like I'm talking to people who aren't there, or sometimes I feel like I've left my body temporarily. And that was obviously to gauge whether these people were having hallucinations. And what they found was that people who tended to consume more caffeine during the day, whether it was in the form of tea or coffee or even chocolate, were more likely to hallucinate.
Any confounding factors here?
Well, the big confounding factor here is, although this shows an association between consuming caffeine and having hallucinations, it doesn't show that caffeine actually causes hallucinations. In other words, somebody who's prone to hallucinations may also just be prone to drinking a lot of coffee. So the study isn't rigorous enough to prove the link. It just shows that there's an association.
What about building up a tolerance? I think I've got a pretty good tolerance now to caffeine because of the coffee I drink.
Well, that's the other problem. People tend to build up a tolerance to caffeine, as you say. They may also build up a tolerance to hallucinations, which you would think would weaken this effect if caffeine was actually causing the hallucinations in the first place. So that's another confounding factor.
Huh, a tolerance to hallucinations. I must be hallucinating myself right now. Maybe it's the caffeine, but I thought you had said something about astronauts eating silkworms.
I did indeed. You were not hallucinating, Rob. This story, this final story, is about future space missions. And the problem with future space missions is that they're envisioned to take months or even years as we explore areas of space and planets that are farther and farther away from Earth. And the question is, how are astronauts going to survive on these missions? What are they going to eat? And researchers have been thinking about this question for a long time, and they've considered various food sources. Obviously, we need a lot of protein in our diet to survive. And a lot of our protein now, for those of us who aren't vegetarians, comes from things like chicken and fish.
Those would be pretty hard to bring on a spacecraft, wouldn't it?
That's true. Especially with poultry, you're talking about relatively large creatures that take up a lot of space, produce a lot of excrement. And even with fish, you've got the problem of fish need to be grown in a very controlled environment. Otherwise, they don't mate like they're supposed to. They don't grow like they're supposed to. So there's problems with these two food sources. And so a group of scientists proposed silkworms.
To eat.
To eat.
Why silkworms? Lots of protein?
Well, that's one thing. Silkworm pupae are mostly protein. And in fact, they contain twice as many essential amino acids as pork does, and four times as much as eggs and milk. But that's not the only thing. They're also very small, so they don't take up a lot of space. They breed very quickly, and they only produce small amounts of excrement, which itself can be used as a fertilizer.
Now, wait, you'd still have to eat a lot of them, right?
You would. In fact, the researchers on this paper estimate you'd have to eat about 170 of them a day.
Doesn't that still sort of cramp the spaceship?
Well, a lot less than chicken or fish would. And what's a real bonus is that even the inedible parts of the silkworms, such as their silk, can actually be made edible through chemical processing, and it could be mixed with fruit juice, sugar, and even food coloring to make jam. And Rob, you know, this idea is really not so far-fetched. There's already people in China that eat silkworms. So for Chinese astronauts, at least, this would be a natural. And for other astronauts, it would just be a question of overcoming some cultural taboos.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, in Science Now, we're looking into a story about the neurological basis for why some people follow the crowd more than others do, and also a story about why the bat did not cross the road. And on Science Insider, we continue to follow updates about Obama's transition to the White House. And specifically this week, we're looking a lot into math and science education. What do Obama's picks portend for how math and science are taught in the classroom? So be sure to check out the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus the latest science policy news on the Science Insider blog. Find a link online at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.